And welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with our game week 17 preview. Andy, it's nearly Christmas. My name is Chris Hopkins, and I am joined by the German team's UEFA coefficient to my English team's UEFA coefficient. It's Andy Case. Andy, other than my pure giddiness for Christmas, talk to me about coefficients, because I'm sure you've got similar levels of gid.
Of gid, yeah, that's definitely a word.
Got gid in your pants, haven't you? Gid marks everywhere.
Right, okay. I mean, you've lowered the tone significantly within 30 seconds of the start, but yeah. Okay. Coefficients, brilliant, love them. Love a coefficient. Obviously, this is all this year. This particular one is about who gets the extra Champions League spots next year. England arrogantly just presuming they're going to get another one, because I think something like 7 of the last 8 years they've been in the top 2 performing nations in European competitions. But yes, Newcastle and Manchester United crashing out of Europe entirely, so not just out of the Champions League, but not making the Europa League, has severely had an impact on England's coefficient for next season in multiple ways. One, because they're not getting the points that give them a decent score in the first instance, but then they will now no longer be able to accumulate further points to add towards the coefficient because they're not dropping into the Europa League. So, and at the end of the season, the score is divided by the number of teams that started off in Europe for that country. So that is two sort of holes that United and Newcastle will be leaving in the English calculation there. Yeah, and at the moment they are not in the top two. If things were to be worked out now, England would not be getting an additional 5th Champions League spot next season.
Obviously, as you I think you're saying off air to me that obviously it's weighted by competition, but I'm guessing that we do have more. We've got more teams in European competition this year in general, because West Ham also won the Conference League and wouldn't have qualified for Europe had they not. So. How will that potentially impact things? I guess all of our Europa League teams having a good run, and Villa in the Conference League is gonna help, one would assume. And I think most of our English teams are in a good position to qualify from the Europa League tonight, at least. I guess we need a winner and some deep runs, which obviously, as you say, can't be influenced now in the Europa League by Man United and Newcastle either.
Yeah, I think there are people out there who modelled this type of thing, but I think you need like wins in games count big, right, towards points and then qualification. So obviously the further you get, the more chances you have to accumulate. Because I think you pick up consolation points, even if you lose the game, like towards the coefficient, right? So so getting through each time allows you another opportunity to pick up points, even if it ends up being the consolation points. So, obviously the further the teams go, the better. I'm not 100% sure, but on that thing that I said to you about it being weighted, but I think it is. I think it must be. Otherwise, you could have like one Serbian team get to like the semi-finals of the Conference League, and that coefficient is divided by one, and then they look amazing, right? So I can't imagine it would end up working like that.
Yeah, gotta be. And just why does it matter? I'm guessing it matters to you because you feel that fifth place obviously increases your team's chances of getting in the Champions League. But beyond that, it doesn't really matter to normal fans that don't really aren't invested in this, right? I say normal, that's maybe not the right word, but why does it matter?
I guess it must have a... I don't actually 100% know this, but I presume it must have a bigger... I mean, I guess it does, to most people, it doesn't matter. No, full stop, right? But I think it matters to more than just Champions League teams, because I would imagine it has an impact. It's an additional spot. So I don't know whether you then still get your other ones, like your Europa League spots and your Conference League spots that you usually... Because we would usually get 2 Europa League spots and 1 Conference League one, right? Mm. So this Champions League one, I don't know whether it takes away one of the Europa League ones if you're to get an extra one, or whether it's in addition. You'd think it would only seem like right that it's in addition, but I don't know. So perhaps there's a consequence for, more mid-table teams, because if it was to go down to 8th, rather than 7th for spots in Europe, then that's helpful for me. I mean, like Fulham you know, making a run. Everton, I think I read, would be 10th if it weren't for their points deduction. So it could have influences for them.
Interesting. And obviously, we said goodbye to Champions League group games, didn't we? No more of them. What's the format next year? Is it just some weird sort of 13-team knockout scenario? Or what's going on?
Well, they called it the Swiss style format. I mean, there will still technically be group games, but it's one big group with everyone in. A massive Champions League orgy. everyone in the same group. You play 8 different teams on a sort of seeded basis so that you get a reasonably, you know, in theory, balanced schedule. Four at home, 4 away. And then the results are kind of stacked up. We're a bit more used to this, I suppose, with NFL in the sense of if you look at a whole like conference, right, you have a set of standings across a whole conference where not all the teams have necessarily played each other, right? And so it's kind of going to work like that a bit, essentially.
Right. Makes sense.
Basically the qualifications based on like the top eight in that league table will automatically go through to the round of 16, and 9 to 24 will have a playoff round to make all up. Right. Yeah, and then it'll work as a normal knockout after that.
Potentially exciting, but I guess I don't like change. And yeah, I've got no idea I knew something was happening, but yeah, not across the details. I guess it doesn't really matter. You don't need to be across the details for the Champions League changes when your team is 22nd in League Two. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I suppose Ipswich Town fans might have to start getting a little bit more familiar with the European coefficients and stuff if they continue flying up leagues in the way they are currently.
I mean, last time you won promotion to the Premier League, it was UEFA Cup next season, wasn't it, I think?
And the season after that, yeah, back-to-back Europe.
Yeah, fair. You could get in through the Fair Play League. That doesn't count.
No, well, it did count. But, yeah,
but that doesn't really count, does it? Like, yeah, that's not qualifying on merit. Thankfully, that nonsense doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, the first season was, I mean, awful for me, to be honest. But yeah, I can see it being repeated itself in some way, shape or form. Anyway, let's crack on, Andy. Let's talk about game week 17. Plenty to discuss, particularly in our talking points. As always on our previous shows, we'll start by running down the all-important fixtures before we do chat about this week's talking points, which there are many injuries and possibly some strategy to think about. We've got a few new players on the radar, but it repeats a lot of game week 16 and therefore probably quite a bit of game week 15 too. We will be trying to catch each other in our honey traps, and then we'll finish as we always do with captaincy and who the heck is that. Let's start then by running down those all important game week 17 fixtures. Your FPL deadline is this Friday, the 15th of December at 6:30, because Friday night football is Nottingham Forest hosting Tottenham. Then we've got no lunchtime kickoff, but we've got plenty of action still on Saturday. 4:00 they are Bournemouth versus Luton, Chelsea versus Sheffield United, Man City versus Crystal Palace, and Newcastle versus Fulham, before we finish on Saturday with the tea time kickoff, Burnley hosting Everton.
Moving on to Sunday, we have Arsenal versus Brighton, Brentford versus Aston Villa, West Ham versus Wolves, and then I think that's the end of the list, isn't it? There's no more games after that.
No more games, mate.
Oh no, there's a match at Anfield between Liverpool and Man United.
I will be in Liverpool for that. We'll be sat might find a pub. I can't be dealing with them. Can't be dealing with them fans. So yeah, best avoid, I think. Talking points, Andy, there's plenty to discuss, but I guess nothing more pertinent from an FPL point of view than the rumoured injury to Erling Haaland. Obviously, he sat out City's last Premier League game against Luton in game week 16. We didn't get any... Well, we've got some hints, but after the deadline that might be happening. We didn't get anything from Pep in his pre-game press conference. Then, obviously, Haaland sat out City's Champions League game, although that was pretty much a dead rubber, and Pep made wholesale changes anyway. And I think the manager himself said that Haaland would be expected to train on Thursday, i.e. today as we record. There will be another press conference before they play Crystal Palace. But ultimately, at the minute, 85%, I think, of FPL managers have £14 million tied up in one player that might not be playing this game week and is definitely blanking in game week 18. So what the hell do we do?
Yeah, I mean, he's such a good player, and he uses up so much of your budget that there's a huge problem here, isn't there? And I think we'd all been sort of, we've been highlighting, and lots of the FPL community have been planning for game week 18, but now there's this potential issue in 17 as well. It puts a lot of us in a difficult position where you do not want to be without Haaland if he's playing Crystal Palace at home, but you don't want to get stuck where he doesn't end up playing and then you've got £40 million stored up in a player who's double blanking. So it is tricky. All we can say is what we'd always say, really listen out for the press conferences. Pep is not the most useful on that front, though, frankly. I guess I'm almost a little bit hesitant to try and put some of my own opinion on it because I don't want other people to blame me for their FPL decision making. So you have to make your own decisions. But from what we've seen so far, like, it seems like he is fit. He would be fit enough to play. He was training before on the pitch before Man City's Champions League game yesterday. Now, that doesn't mean he's 100% fit, but he's clearly not absolutely ruled out, right? And Pep has also said in a press conference that he expects Haaland to be back in training with the squad on Thursday, today, as we're recording. So that, you know, some of the breadcrumbs are being sort of laid there as though he might well be fit and available. We're probably not going to get 100% clear clarification, are we, from Pep, because he never does that. So I guess the best you can do is try to make the most out of the information we do get. I mean, I don't really, I suppose, have two strategies in your mind of what you do with him and what you do without him. Leave it as late as possible to get as much information as possible, and then you're going to have to lean down on one of those choices, basically.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I mean, I don't think either of us, Andy, would advocate for keeping him across the two next game weeks. I guess that might be a little bit different if you have already used your wild card and it's difficult to get him back. But equally, I think if you knew he was missing two games on the bounce, I guess you could sell and then make sure that you've got enough funds to somehow get him back in. Because there are some and we'll come to this, there are some decent looking fixtures for other forward assets over the next two game weeks. So I feel, as you say, £14 million sat on your bench potentially along with other Man City assets next week, or maybe other Brentford assets next game week too, who are blanking, then it feels like it just feels like a lot of money tied up on a bench spot, as I say, for potentially two game weeks. I think Pep did say that he would try to clarify or try to have some more information for his next press conference, but that could be a total load of nonsense, as you say, and we don't often get very much clarity from him. But maybe sometimes we get a little bit more from him than others. You know, maybe Eddie Howe is consistently almost lying to the media in his press conferences. So, maybe we'll get something from Pep ahead of that. Related, Andy, I guess, particularly for those with wildcards and wondering when to play it, whether to bring Haaland back in and maybe who to get rid of. We've got two major FPL assets and two expensive premium assets in Son and Salah, likely to be missing for most of January with the African Cup of Nations and the Asian Cup. Obviously, there will be other FPL assets involved, Karen Matoma, a few others. I think Nottingham Forest probably have the most players that are going to be away on international duty during those game weeks. And we think at the minute for full participation, definitely looking to miss game weeks 21 through to 24. I mean, how is that going to affect things? And does this Haaland news change things a little bit? I know that with the Haaland news, there seems to be more clamour, if you haven't used it already, to wildcard in and set yourself up almost without Haaland at this point. For me, it still feels like selling him and bringing him back later on with the wildcard seems better to me. But how do we think about Son and Salah within all of that?
Yeah, they really complicate the situation, because I think it would be... If it was just a case of in game week 19 or 20, you wildcard Haaland back in and get yourself a team set up that you think looks nice, then great. But the problem is you're going to be in a bit of a position where you either have to create your wildcard team with Son and Salah in or without Son and Salah in, right? And most people, I imagine, are going to fall down on the side of probably trying. I mean, what I imagine a lot of people might do is, assuming Man City get to the Club World Cup final, you know, and that Haaland's had this little bit of a stress injury, maybe gamble that he doesn't play the whole game in game week 19 once they've flown back from Saudi Arabia, and keep hold of Son and Salah, and don't use your wild card, and use your wild card ahead of 20, so that you just lose Son and Salah for that single game week before you know you'll be losing them in 21, because they'll be at the respective competitions. And by the way, the 21 to 24 is only if they were to both make the final of their respective competitions. So that's something to keep an eye on. It could only be two or three game weeks in FPL. It might not be four. But anyway, yeah, they won't be there certainly for 21, because that's the start of the competitions. So yeah, if you wildcarded Haaland back in 20, then you lost Son and Salah, or maybe just one of them, because you could transfer the other one out in a free transfer in 21, then that's almost like minimizing the weeks at both ends of the players' absences that they would not be there for, right? So I imagine a lot of people might try and like take it down that route, but then you're still in the position where you've made a wildcard team in 20 that doesn't have Son and Salah in, or won't do by a week later. And then, you know, as and when they come back, you're very likely to going to want them to have them back in your FPL team, right? So you're going to have to, regardless of your kind of wildcard approach, you are going to have to think ahead to how you're going to deal with that situation. I mean, similarly, although they're not as expensive as Haaland, like there aren't many as expensive midfielders this year. So even like 9.6 or whatever it is for Son at the moment is a lot to be having tied up in someone that you might have to bench for two, three game weeks. That's not really a justifiable way forward. And obviously Salah, it goes to saying, even more like 13 point, whatever he is, you can't really just stick him on the bench for two, three or four game weeks. You probably are going to have to like think about money in the bank, or to try and get them back in later down the line, or I don't know, like rolling so that you're aiming to have two free transfers for like, what would it be? I guess 24 or 25, I guess. But not just that money in the bank as well. But I don't really see any other way that you can get around that, because you can't have two or three weeks with like Son and Salah on your bench, can you? So it is a tricky one. Of course, you will get a new wild card post game week 20, but you don't necessarily want to splurge that one when the transfer window hasn't closed yet, and two, when you know, bigger problems could come later down the line, you've got no get out at that point. So yeah, it really is a sticky situation.
Yeah, especially maybe using that second wild card to set yourself up for double game weeks over down the line as well, could be worthwhile. So yeah, splurging two in the space of about five game weeks does feel it does feel a little bit unnecessary. But as you say, you know, if you are going to set up your wildcard teams without players that are essentially away at different competitions, whether that's the Club World Cup or the Asian Cup or the African Cup of Nations, thinking about how to get them back in is always pertinent. I guess the other bit of FPL news, Andy, we are seeing five yellow card suspensions coming. I think there's been some stats released this week. It might have been from PGMOL about the amount of yellow cards for dissent this season and the increase in that. So obviously from an FPL point of view, Kieran Trippier, I guess, is the headline out suspended for Newcastle's game this week with five yellow cards. I think he might have picked up a knock in the Champions League anyway, so you know, we'd have to get some word on his fitness. But yeah, it's just a bit of an FYI, and I guess, yeah, you know, I would definitely have a case where I think three of my five defenders were on four bookings, and had they all picked a fifth booking up in the same game week, that would have been pretty disastrous for me. Thankfully, at least one of them is riding out of ban this week. So yeah, I guess that leaves potentially two, giving me a headache further down the line. But I'm guessing they're going to get wiped relatively soon. Is it after game week 19 they get wiped? So, or not wiped, but the threshold increases to 10, doesn't it, I think, at that point. So, yeah, worth keeping an eye on any suspension news in your team. And yeah, I mean, not one that we've swum against. The one that I wonder if it was one to think about. But I've seen quite a few people getting rid of Kieran Trippier. I mean, you would keep hold of him for a one-game suspension, I guess, just waiting on that fitness, right?
Well, maybe the thinking is like wild card, right? So like,
right,
if, because he's expensive as well, he's 7 mil or whatever, and so you're just rolling the dice on not having him in game week 18, and then you might wild card him back in 19, right? And a lot of people now have obviously gone and bought Dubravka last week, and so you've got some kind of coverage of Newcastle defence possibly.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, let's move on to the radar, and this is very much a pick. We do have someone in the centre this week, but it's very much dependent on if Erling Haaland is out or if we get any hint from Pep Guardiola in his Friday press conference. But Ollie Watkins feels like I don't want to say essential own, Andy, but at the minute, you and I are both sitting without him, and his ownership is around 40%. He's going to be a very, very appealing captaincy option next game week when Liverpool will play Arsenal and City blank. Not owning him at the minute feels like some real kind of pain. But if you are getting rid of Haaland this week, it doesn't feel like there are many better places to go, does there?
No, I mean, it's exactly that, really. It's painful enough at the moment. We don't generally like putting players that are this high-owned on the radar anywhere, let alone in the centre. But I think it just had to make the point that if there is some type of news that Haaland's out, a lot of people who are in that 60% who don't own him currently would likely be making that move, and the pain will grow even more. And like you said, certainly in game week 18, when Villa have got Sheffield United at home, that EO, that expected ownership, is going to absolutely fly up. So, I think there's a balance, isn't there, of like high of, you know, pointing out, stating the obvious, but equally us not overlooking. Sometimes we're conscious that when we don't put players like Salah, as we have in the past, or Watkins here high owned, it might come across that we haven't considered them or aren't thinking about them, right? So we just wanted to, like, I guess, note that. Despite him being 40% owned, we would absolutely he'd be right up there in our thoughts for transfers.
Moving outwards, Andy, to the mid-range, and we've kept Dominic Solanke here, and I think it's worth mentioning him at this point in comparison almost to Ollie Watkins. Dom Solanke is almost, I think he's 1.9 million, so almost £2 million cheaper than Watkins. Obviously has a significantly lower ownership, but underlying numbers are pretty similar over the course of the year. I think it's I think both have an XG over the course of the season of about 8. Both have 8 goals, but Ollie Watkins has a significantly higher points output because he's got 9 assists from an expected assists of just under 2, whereas Solanke, I don't think, has got an XA. I mean, he's got a similar XA, frankly. I think it's about 1, but obviously hasn't got, you know, isn't outperforming that by almost 7 assists. I feel like neither of these players, well, I guess Watkins can be explosive, but is a bit streaky, whereas Solanke is relatively steady, but isn't particularly explosive. You know, does generally run, I think, even in, you know, in good form, a kind of 1 goal every other game week, which for a £6.6 million forward isn't bad. But we did flirt with putting him in the centre too, but it's just something that I don't think we can get on board with, because the underlying numbers, while good and while he ranks high, ranks, you know, alongside Watkins, it's not quite good enough, is it, I don't think, for us at this point.
Yeah, we really struggle with this one. One of the ones we struggled with most over the years of doing this, actually, really, this particular positioning, because for his price, you know, a goal every other game is not unreasonable whatsoever, but it's also not like breaking your doors down absolutely outrageous, right? So it's so close to the centre, as close as you can possibly be without being on it. I think if his output had been ever so slightly higher over the course of the season so far, then that might have just done enough to creep him on it. But I mean, recently in particular, Bournemouth's attacking numbers in general and the XG that Solanke's been accumulating has really been like impressive. And I think, you know, if it wasn't for the pain it causes by not having Watkins, if you were judging them both on just who's the best option to bring in, it would be a very, very 50-50 decision, because it's 2 mil saved ultimately, isn't it, on Solanke, and the underlying numbers are roughly equivalent over the season. And actually, in fact, recently, Solanke's are significantly better. I think it's like 3.5-ish or 3.6-ish XG in the last six for Watkins, whereas it's like 4.8 for Solanke. So his are actually better, and Bournemouth's are actually better than Villa's. The creative numbers, Bournemouth are the second best team in the league for XG created over the last six matches, and whereas Villa are kind of roundabout in mid-table, so on that front. So yeah, I mean, I think it's, thinking about it now, I can just think about reasons to have put him on the centre, but just I think it's a really, it's still a really good pick. And although we've had it, another reason we were thinking is because he has been sitting around about that mid-range for 2 weeks now, and it's kind of like, well, at this point, are you like, it's like almost a back him or sack him, right? Like, if you're still have, you know, Andy and Chris, if you're still having him around on your radar, then what are you saying about him? But I think for me, this is probably the last week we might be talking about him, just because it's Luton, Forest and Fulham. So three good fixtures in the next three, whereas that sort of, you know, there'll only be two of those particularly juicy looking fixtures by the time it comes, which still doesn't mean don't get him, but like, it's less appealing on that front. So yeah, like him, basically, it's a good pick.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I think, again, compared to Watkins, as you say, that Luton fixture this game week, Luton at home as well for Bournemouth, whereas Villa have Brentford away. I mean, you know, Brentford do ship goals, and Villa are obviously playing very well. Obviously, they are playing midweek also, so maybe that comes into consideration. You know, Villa have still got some good fixtures down the line. Sheffield United at home after that, Man United away can definitely be got at, Burnley, you know, in game week 20. So, you know, Watkins has a good run, but I think for the next three, you'd probably say Solanke has the better of it. And I think, you know, it was something that I mentioned on the pod a few weeks ago. Bournemouth in general seem to have turned a bit of a corner. And yeah, these three fixtures that they've got on the horizon, you know, look pretty appealing, and they've definitely got some good results against better sides in recent game weeks. So yeah, as close to the centre as one can be. But yeah, I think Watkins's ownership and the discomfort that it can cause not owning him almost puts him sort of a nose ahead of Solanke, even if Solanke's actual output and underlying numbers are seemingly better. No more Isak on our radar, Andy. He was on the mid-range last week, but Callum Wilson obviously returned to fitness at the weekend, coming off the bench and then started in the Champions League last night. So back to normal, I imagine, for Newcastle, rotating those two centre-forwards, although rumours of an Anthony Gordon injury and Isak maybe being put out on the left means that Isak, well, both may end up with minutes, but I know from an FPL point of view, Isak on the left isn't exactly what we want to see. Another Newcastle player has dropped in our radar, still remaining on it, but on the fringe this time, is Martin Dubravka. I mean, ultimately started in the Premier League at the weekend, and obviously started in the Champions League too, despite some rumours about a little injury and possibly some illness as well. Conceding goals at the minute, Newcastle, and I think the overarching narrative about them is that they just look shattered and are seemingly running out of puff towards, also, I guess, kind of after 60 minutes in games. They're getting some of their key players back, but ultimately, defensively, they are without Kieran Trippier this game week. They still are without Sven Botman, so you know, we could see Livramento move over to right back, but and Dan Byrne might be making his return, but it might come a little bit too soon for him as well. Also, we're a little bit closer to January now, and we fully expect Newcastle to end up addressing the goalkeeper position in the transfer window. So, you know, well done, I guess, if you got on Dubravka, and we're not saying that he's still not worth it, but I guess he's just one game week less worth it than he was last time.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different to say get rid of him now versus don't necessarily bring him in, as you know, not be as keen to bring him in right now, right? They're slightly different things. And I think, yeah, if you've got him, then don't worry too much, because he, you know, probably will start. But there's just a few more questions. So that makes him a bit less of an appealing transfer in, right? And you've mentioned some of them there. Is there injury? Is there illness? Are they looking to address that position in January? There's been question marks and kind of mixed messages, mixed reporting from reporters on all those issues. And actually, sneakily, because even up until the last, like when we were first put to Dubravka on 2 weeks ago, Newcastle was still up there in the top sort of three or four best teams in terms of XGC, but actually they're now fourth worst in the league over the last six matches for expected goals conceded. So I think that that must be just a couple of bad performances recently that's kind of throwing that out, but that's not insignificant. Now, we'd expect the longer period under Howe to be the prevailing one of a demonstration of Newcastle being like all right defensively. And bottom line is, any 4 million starting keeper we usually say is a pretty decent transfer in, right? So the outrageous clean sheet numbers were just a massive juicy cherry on the top, right? So you'd like to think that Newcastle would that this is a blip for them rather than that they're now just like bad consistently defensively. But it's not insignificant to highlight just that bigger drop off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've conceded 7 in their last 2 league matches. They've also conceded in an XGC of 7.1. So,
right. So that is what's throwing that out then, because their XGC over the last 6 is 10.4. So,
And I guess, I don't think this is even necessarily on Dubravka. I think it feels more like fatigue and injuries maybe finally catching up with them. I don't, I haven't seen anything that's, Dubravka makes kind of glaring errors that have necessarily led to goals. But, changing your goalkeeper will unsettle the defence a little bit anyway. But yeah, obviously the underlying numbers for him aren't particularly great. There's not a lot in the sort of XG prevented column for Martin Dubravka so far that we can see. But obviously, Everton are scoring goals at the minute, and Tottenham are obviously always capable of scoring goals, whereas the fixtures on the horizon for Newcastle maybe look a little bit better. Fulham this game week than Luton and Nottingham Forest, although it is worth saying that that Fulham have scored 10 in their last 2, so they might have done a Bournemouth and turned the corner themselves. So I think I'm going to wait for a game against a slightly more difficult opposition before I crown them in the same way that I crowned Bournemouth a few weeks ago. We just mentioned Spurs, Andy, and their ability to score goals. Appearing on the fringe of our radar here is Pedro Porro. Not one that I'm particularly keen on. I feel like I'm probably a little bit biased, a little bit blinded by the fact that I already own Destiny Adoghi on the other side, and there's just something about him that I prefer. But I think Porro's underlying attacking numbers have been consistently above Adoghi's most of the year, and he feels like a pretty good asset at the minute. I think he's got pretty good expected assists. Spurs seem to not have particularly great clean sheet potential, and obviously much has been made of their defensive injuries. Obviously Romero, I think, is now back after his suspension, but Van de Ven has obviously been out and has been relatively key to some of their defensive successes this year. And ultimately he's a bit expensive, Andy, but I did also see a comment today, I'm not sure if it was on Twitter or an FPL website, that said Pedro Porro feels like the third best defender in the game at the minute. I mean, I don't want to set you up too easily, but that's one of the most disagreeable things I remember seeing regarding defenders in FPL for a while.
I mean, that feels like a big shout. What are they saying? Are they 1 and 2? Like,
I think it was Trippier and Trent.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have Trent in the top 3 probably either, would we? So, because you have to take price into account, and they're both quite pricey, but no, I mean, look, the bottom line is the underlying numbers aren't fantastic defensively, but that is, that is thrown out of whack by the games where they had suspensions and injuries. And Romero and Davies are kind of, Davies has played plenty at centre-back whilst he might not be like a completely natural one, right? So, and they're both experienced players. So it's not like they've got a complete, they're not playing Johnny Bloody Evans at centre-back, are they? So come back and cry me a river when that's happening, Tottenham fans. But
I mean, were playing Emerson Royale for a game or two, so I think I'd be taking Johnny Evans, but there we are.
In one game, we've started him like 5 times or something. Came off the bench when Maguire got injured in Champions League against bloody Bayern, bloody Munich in midweek, and he's probably starting at Anfield on Sunday. So I'm not having that. We're not in a worse position anyway. Pedro Porro. So Pedro Porro is playing in a reasonably more settled defence now than those recent underlying numbers kind of demonstrate. I'm not saying I expect Tottenham to be like amazing. And I actually think, Fulham there, might be a bit more of a test people may suspect, as you say, with their goals recently. But he does have decent upside going forward. At least this is, I guess, why he's on the fringe here, not necessarily higher up, because if the clean sheet numbers were better, maybe he'd be higher up. But yeah, the best defender in the game for expected assists, and we know he bombs on the right side there, in the top three in the entire game across all positions as well, actually, for expected assists. So yeah, he's 5.4 million, but I think when you factor in like that this is in the context of potentially there being some Haaland money, spare money, like flying around, then you know, it isn't so much of an issue looking at a defender that's over 5 mil. And Spurs do have, at least on paper, the third best fixtures between now and the FA Cup third round, which is kind of, we think, probably the most helpful run to look at, because then the fixtures get a lot more spaced out. So the sort of opportunity for a run of consistency isn't as high. And so that's four game weeks from now until the FA Cup third round. And yes, Spurs have the sort of some of the best fixtures in the game on that front. So yeah, I mean, Forest, Everton, Brighton, Bournemouth, it's yeah, you know, there may be, even for a less defensively sound team, some clean sheet opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about teams with good underlying defensive numbers, Andy, and we mentioned them on the Anyone Else last week, but fully making the radar this week is just Bournemouth defenders. I think at the minute they've got a settled-ish back four. They've been playing Marcos Senesi, Ilya Zabiani, Milos Kerkez and Adam Smith. I think they've all started and played the full 90 in their last four games, definitely coincided with an uptick in Bournemouth's defensive numbers, and obviously Neto in goal. I think I described him last week to another FPL player as the hipster's pick for a goalkeeper. Obviously returned a clean sheet against Man United, although that was relatively unexpected, but they've definitely got some good fixtures on the horizon, as we outlined when discussing Dominic Solanke. The keeper is 4.5, all of those defenders that I listed at 4.4, and I guess at this point it's still very much what we said last week, Andy. We're not saying, you know, go out and change a defender for a Bournemouth defender, but it's, if you have a defensive issue and you want to fix it, then Bournemouth would probably be a decent place to look.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. When you consider those numbers, I mean, again, a bit like the Solanke thing, really, it feels almost weird. It's almost like we're not trusting ourselves properly to say it, are we? Because if it was a team with a different name and a different badge, we'd probably be speaking about these defenders more highly. But the bottom line is, you know, Bournemouth have been up there for a few weeks now when you look at the last six matches, and continue to be third best in the league for non-penalty expected goals conceded over their last six games. Senesi obviously is a particular interesting one, and quite a few people have been bringing him in. He has had goals in the last two game weeks, so that itself may not be sustainable, but I think it demonstrates he is a threat up there, and he's ultimately only 4.4 million. And it isn't just all those factors, although they're helpful ones. It is the fixtures ultimately as well. Like, even if there's a slight bit of your gut like us that is inclined to not necessarily 100% trust Bournemouth, even if they weren't at their best, they're playing Luton, Forest, Fulham the next three. So, like, there'd be a reasonable chance of a clean sheet. I suppose if we've just said on Porro that money is less of an object to people, then perhaps that advantage of them only being 4.4 million, a lot of their starting defenders, matters less. I guess you've got to compare them to like the Porros of the world and other price defenders, I guess, because people will be making a choice with cash to burn. So are you picking a Bournemouth defender over, say, a Tottenham defender, or I don't know who else? Like, I guess we've spoken about Wolves in previous weeks, albeit their fixtures, you know, aren't necessarily as good as they were. I'm trying to think of other options, you know, who else are people looking at? Chelsea have got a decent fixture run. You know, would people be picking a Bournemouth defender over a Chelsea defender? I don't know. What's your thoughts?
I would be, because I just don't trust Chelsea at the minute, frankly. But yeah, I guess if, you know, we've lamented at this point, because Arsenal have had basically the best underlying defensive numbers consistently, basically all season. But if you can't trust Gabriel for starts, then their cheapest or sort of the most consistent ways into their team regularly felt like William Saliba or Ben White, who, you know, were 5.4 or 5.7 million. If money was no object, I think I'd absolutely go with one of those. But if money is an object, then I'm quite happy to settle at Bournemouth, I think. So yeah, I guess that's maybe where I'd come down on it. But yeah, as you say, if you're selling Haaland, and Arsenal have an okay fixture, which, you know, I don't think they do in coming game.
It's Brighton, Liverpool the next two for them.
Yeah,
so it's
difficult, isn't it, to really sort of hang your hat on them at the minute. I think, you know, for a one game punt, given some of those fixtures, I think Bournemouth might be a really interesting way to go, and they're almost definitely differentials, particularly if you avoid Senesi, who is getting some pretty casual transfers in based on his recent goal output. Anyone else, Andy, to add? I think given the Erling Haaland potential injury, there is an obvious name to mention, but obviously he comes with all of the other caveats that surround Haaland, namely being a blank in game week 18.
Yeah, and that's Julian Alvarez. I mean, yeah, look, it's definitely a 1 week punt, and in some respects, it's daft to be making a transfer in for a player that you know is definitely not playing the game week after. But that said, there is a difference between him and Haaland, and you wouldn't have 14 million stored up in Alvarez, right? So if Haaland isn't going to play, Alvarez is going to be through the middle for City at home against Crystal Palace, and we'll get chances to score goals. And you can afford, it is justifiable to put a 7-ish million forward on your bench for a game week, because then in theory by FPL game week 19 Alvarez would be back being able to play, so you would free up 7 odd mil from Haaland that you could still spread elsewhere in your team. And how much more do you really need? So you get the benefits of spreading the Haaland money, and you can just use a bench slot for Alvarez in 18. So it'd be a nice little differential if he hauls against Palace this game week.
Yeah, it's absolutely worth mentioning, because I think he ultimately as well is a very different FPL prospect when he's playing up front versus when he's sort of squeezing into midfield somehow. I know he was very popular earlier in the year. That popularity waned quite quickly, but yeah, him as a direct replacement for Haaland always seems to have goals in him. So yeah, if you are looking for a 1 week punt and don't fancy Watkins or Solanke that we've already mentioned, and yeah, also happy with him being on your bench, Alvarez might be an interesting way to go. All right, Andy, let's leave it there. Let's take a quick break, and then when we return, we will once again be trying to catch each other in our honey traps.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_Lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Honey trap again, Andy, this week. Let's start by just rounding off how we did last week. You put out that there would be at least 4 away wins in the Premier League last week, and there were just 3, and I took you up on that, so I've escaped with your honey, baby. And I said that a City Man City player would be the highest scoring points player of the week in FPL. You took me up on that and have also escaped with the honey, because it was Heung-min Son. That brings us nicely then on to this week. I don't feel particularly good about this one. I think sometimes maybe I get a bit too cute. Nothing really standing out to me. So I'll go first. I think usually I offer you to go first, and I know that you've already been doing all of the maths for yours. So I think we are literally on this occasion saving the best till last. I'll get it out of the way. And my honey trap for you this week is that the highest scoring Premier League game will be on Sunday and will feature a team that is playing tonight, i.e. Thursday. So that gives you the highest scoring Premier League game of the weekend will be Brentford versus Aston Villa, West Ham versus Wolves, or Liverpool versus Man United.
Well, no, it doesn't, because Brighton are playing tonight as well. So every single game on Sunday involves a team playing tonight.
Okay, well, I'm just going to have to leave it at that then. So you got the four. You got the four, which means that you're almost definitely not going to take this. But yeah, that's why I'm going to leave it.
So basically, the highest scoring game is on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I thought about getting very oniony. Originally, I wanted it to just be Liverpool United. But I don't want it to be that obvious. Do you know what I mean? I want it to
yeah,
be
I mean, I'd
a bit,
have to
bit
take
more
you,
tricky.
I would have to take you, but I wouldn't be surprised for that being. And I know you're playing to the crowd here, like, you know, your audience. So I know that, you know, I'd think that's got a good chance of being the highest scoring. But
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I guess Sunday has, you know, that game. It's also got Arsenal Brighton that has potential to score goals. Brentford Villa has the potential for goals. And I guess on the Saturday, and Friday, I guess in theory, there could be goals. I guess you're relying on maybe some one-sided performances. There also, you know, there's no draw here, so it has to come on Sunday. It has to be a clear winner. So, you know, if there was five goals in Man United Liverpool and five goals in checks notes Burnley Everton, then, you know, that wouldn't win for me. Has to be clear.
Listen, Burnley scored you five goals to win you a honey trap a couple of weeks ago. So
they did, and I've been praying to Vance and company ever since.
I can understand what you're trying to sell there, and ultimately there are six games to your four. If I was to take you, and you know, Chelsea could score and concede plenty against Sheffield United. You could see Bournemouth sticking a few past Luton, obviously City at home. Fulham been scoring plenty recently. So a few opportunities for me to have games which could have a fair few goals in. I'd be interested if there was a way of looking at the maths of this, because I feel like it would be in my favour, but not hugely.
I'd say that
yeah, the three that you highlighted on Sunday are probably three of the bigger chances of high scoring, because I guess, like, it's, you're not just relying on one team dropping the other necessarily in all of them. Yeah, I don't know. This is a close one. This feels tricky. I guess the way to look at it is, like, if I had to pick a side. So, like, if I had free choice, right? Which one?
Yeah, nice juicy honey at the end of the rainbow.
Well, or even if there was, but I could choose my route to the honey, whether I get Sunday or not Sunday, right? Which would I pick? And like, the reason I think about it like that is because if it's like, if you think about it like that, and I go, oh no, I wouldn't want to have Sunday if it was offered it to me, then that's kind of like a good sign that you should probably. You're happy to go with the other side, right? And I feel kind of like basically what I just said, really, that if I had to pick, I probably would lean on just the numbers of having, you know, 50% extra fixtures on my side. But yeah. I don't feel hugely strongly, like I wouldn't be worried too much about having Sunday if that was me. So as it's a tight one, I feel like I probably wouldn't take it. When you just add in a little sprinkle there of the extra worry of, like, you know, what happened at Anfield last season.
Obviously, ultimately, that's what I'm getting at, isn't it? It's, you know, praying on your mind.
And it'd be double salt in the wound, wouldn't it? So
it would be, yeah.
I think I'm going to have to leave it. But I mean, I could easily regret that, but I think I'm going to have to leave it, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think, yeah, obviously, forgetting that Brighton was playing, I was trying to think of a way to juice this one up a little bit, and yeah, maybe take a fixture out. And because I didn't think the 6-4, given the fixtures on the Sunday, that you would end up taking it. I thought about going just like the UK televised games, but then I was only adding in what I guess is on paper the least likely to be the highest scoring. in addition to Liverpool, Man United, of course. So I thought that would then be too obvious. So I really wanted three in there.
Well, how about you have Brentford, Villa? But so you just go with what you originally thought it was, and you're only having those three.
Well, I was taking Arsenal, Brighton out though. That was the wasn't that the thing. No, I'm gonna stick with it. So I'm gonna stick with what I said. And if you're not gonna take it, yeah, I'm not. But yeah, that's fine. I'm just gonna stick with it. And then we will see, won't we? We will see. Okay. What's yours for me then?
Yeah. All right. Well, don't sound too excited, but it's funny because it's sort of some similarity here, and I suppose when you hear it, you may suggest, why didn't I take you? But I am going to suggest that at least four games on Saturday will go overs. So that's over 2.5 goals in at least four of the games on Saturday. So those four games are five games. There are five games on Saturday, and those are Bournemouth, Luton, Chelsea, Sheffield United, Man City, Palace, Newcastle, Fulham, and Burnley, Everton.
I mean, I guess you could see it in them all. I'm guessing that overs is probably favourite in four or five of them.
That's correct.
I'm guessing Bournemouth Luton is the one where it maybe isn't favourite, and it's going to be basically pick 'em.
Actually, no.
Ah, interesting.
It's Burnley Everton's the one.
Okay, where
it's
fair enough.
Close to even. Yeah.
Fair enough. I guess the higher scoring of those two teams is away from home, whereas that isn't the case in Bournemouth Luton. And you're saying that that four or five will go over.
At least four, yeah. So if all five go over, I'm having that as well.
Yeah, okay. So I'm basically backing two or more to be unders.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, like I said, I did the maths on it. So why don't I tell
you?
Yeah,
go on. Yeah.
So basically, the chance of four or more is 28%. There's a 28% chance of four or more. Yeah, I did all the permutations of like the four folds. There's five different four folds that could work here.
Right? Yeah.
Doesn't quite work like that because you have to also then back the it is a fivefold because you have to also back the overs, the unders in the other one to get the full permutation.
Yeah.
But yeah, by doing that of all the different, so there's five different options there. Of having exactly four, right? And then plus the probability of the one that's all five, right? And that comes to 28%. So obviously, that gives you almost a three quarters chance, 72% of winning this were you to take me.
Yeah, I mean, I think instant hunt was to take you because. Yeah. Yeah, you can see it, can't you? Football is ultimately a low-scoring game. So, I will take you. I can see why you put it out there.
Yeah, it feels close, maybe closer than that. Although, yeah, you've got, if 2-0 and that doesn't count, right? So... And I suppose for the purposes of, I don't know if I've said this outright, we've said it on other shows, but for the purposes of a listener, when I say overs, that means that there will be three or more goals in the game, basically. So the standard overs line is 2.5 goals in the game. And so I'm saying that four of the five games will have more than 2.5 goals in.
Yeah, I'll take it. Excuse me. Okay. Yawning my way through the podcast here, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess you've got, on my side, I've got 0-0, 1-0 either way, 1-1-all, 2-0 either way, and I only need two of those games to finish in with one of, with any of those score lines. And yeah, you can see it. So I will take it. Thank you very much. But I like the math behind it. I like the thought behind it.
Good.
I enjoy it all.
Right. Come on, Chris, wake up. Let's go.
Let's move. No, I'm still kind of thinking about it. It was quite a thoughtful one, and that's what I enjoy. Let's move on then to captaincy, Andy. And we've got quite a long list to, I guess, kind of rattle through for captaincy this week. Obviously, a huge question mark about Erling Haaland. And one would assume that if we do get some positive vibes from Pep this game week, that he will be a pretty popular captaincy choice. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of zombie teams that are going to have him with the armband on anyway. But, you know, if you are still engaged and in competitive mini leagues, then maybe there's a bit more thought to it, and we don't need to worry too much about those sides. But yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, if Pep makes some positive noises about Haaland, saying that he's training on Friday and he's trained on Thursday and he wants to play, you can kind of imagine Pep saying some, you know, words to those effects. Then yeah, I can see him being a pretty popular option. But equally, we've got to mention Julian Alvarez, because we did sort of allude to him on the radar that if Haaland doesn't go and Alvarez is up front, then I think that makes him a reasonable captaincy option this game week, Andy. But we've got to look elsewhere, ultimately, in case Haaland doesn't go. And obviously, you know, Alvarez is a fair option, but maybe not as good as some of these other ones. And I guess I alluded to it a little bit with my honey trap. Salah versus Man United, given Man United's injury issues, particularly at the back, has to be a pretty appealing choice this game week too.
Yeah, I mean, for me, massively. You know, we make it into a bit, we labour the point a bit here, but I think even if you try to just be objective about it, United have looked awful recently. The underlying defensive numbers are poor, very poor. I think they're fifth or sixth worst over the last six games. They've got injuries everywhere. Liverpool ran riot against them in this fixture last season. They're creating loads at the moment. Everything just points to lots of goals for Liverpool here. So, Salah may not... We've seen Salah not be involved when Liverpool have ripped teams apart before, and that's frustrating. But and there will be people out there who own, like, a fair few own Nunes, and so people will be tempted to go for him. But bottom line is, he consistently underperforms his XG, and the safe pick here is Salah. I imagine if you've got Nunes in your team, you've probably got Salah as well. So, like, the evidence over many years is that Salah's a more consistent FPL point scorer, so you have to just captain him if you're going to go for a Liverpool player, surely.
Yeah, makes sense. I guess in terms of United starting back five, I mean, is there anyone that's first choice in there? We don't know about Luke Shaw's fitness. I guess if he is fit, then he would be part of United starting back five. I guess Onana is, but, you know, there's missing Martinez. He's been missing, you know, most of the season, but Maguire obviously went off in midweek. I don't know who really starts right back, whether it's Dalot or Wan-Bissaka at this point. I guess it depends if one of them gets shoved over to left back sometimes. But yeah, obviously, you know, is Lindelof, is he still out as well? He was out, wasn't he? So
he was out in the midweek, which is why Rafa Varane played, and he'd not had a load of minutes recently, and he played the full 90. So whether he's even available in terms of, like, his own fitness.
It's rare that he plays midweek and then on the weekend, isn't it? Or at least it has been, I think, at times in his United career.
Well, it is, but, like, the other available centre-back is Johnny Evans, and he hasn't exactly got much juice in his legs either. So, like, at least one of them is probably going to have to play, and possibly even both if Maguire's not fit. So,
yeah, but I guess that is the point, right? You know, we could be looking at a United back four of you know, Wan-Bissaka, possibly Maguire, possibly Varane, maybe Evans, maybe, you know, right back at left back, or maybe Shaw. I mean, it's hard to know.
Can play left back, and obviously Dalot can play left back if Wan-Bissaka is right back.
Forgotten about Reguilón, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, Reguilón doesn't fill me with confidence about having Mo Salah in his back pocket, and nor does Dalot or Wan-Bissaka, whichever one of those might be moved to left back. And then, you know, I guess if Shaw is fit and you're missing centre backs, he might end up a centre back. So, yeah, there's not a lot to like.
You know, the midfield in front of it isn't going to be particularly, it's very likely to be Amrabat and McTominay plus one other. not 100% sure exactly who that will be at the moment. There's a chance it could be Kobbie Mainoo, although he's not played a lot recently. There's not really been much talk about that, whether that's injury or just his minutes being managed because he's young or what. But McTominay, you know, can and has played at 10 for us this season, so it's not unthinkable to think that it could be Mainoo and Amrabat. I don't know who else there even is. You're kind of looking at like Hannibal Medjbri if it's not him, or
is Eriksen still not fit then?
Eriksen's not fit. Casemiro's not fit, although he has improved his he's been on the grass a bit more.
Right.
So apparently Donny van der Beek's fit, but he's barely played at all, as he's not exactly got match fitness minutes. So yeah, like basically whatever's in front of him. To be honest, the sound of Amrabat Mainoo doesn't sound too awful, really, like in the grand scheme of how some things have been at points this season. But I don't trust it to keep Liverpool out, let's say.
Yeah, and as you say, you know, I think we don't like looking back at games and seasons gone by, but obviously Liverpool can and have had United at their mercy before. So yeah, Salah feels like a pretty decent option. You know, worth also mentioning, I guess, some big hitters in FPL terms. You know, we've got Saka against Brighton at home. Obviously, Brighton have shipped a lot of chances, have been playing makeshift left-backs because of Estupiñán's injury. I think Tariq Lamptey's out as well. So it's been Igor Julio or Jack Hinzelwood or whoever at left-back at times. So, yeah, Saka could absolutely feast on that right-hand side, and Brighton are always pretty open too. Son against Notts Forest. Obviously, I think he was pushed out a little bit more to the left last week and seemed to be playing pretty well out there. It'll be interesting to see how Spurs line up, whether Richarlison continues to get a bit more of a nod or if it's Son back through the middle. But yeah, I think he's a reasonable option against the side and a manager in particular that's under pressure. But there is another player on here, Andy, and obviously he featured on our radar. I'm denied about putting him in the centre, but you know, Dominic Solanke, if you own him and Haaland's not playing, and you fancy a player or striker that plays for a team that have been playing really well and scoring lots of goals, and they're against Luton Town at home, Luton particularly bad away from home, I mean, he could be a really great differential option and one that has plenty of upside.
Well, one of the teams creating the most chances in the league versus one of the teams conceding the most chances in the league. A guy who was, like you say, almost on the centre of our radar at this point. Like, if you're on the centre of our radar, you kind of have to be a captaincy pick because of how high we're setting the bar for the centre, right? So yeah, absolutely. Obviously, that doesn't the radar doesn't account for the other options that are in your team. And I think Salah and if Haaland starts as well, obviously, do they both, of course, look like good options? But I mean, one of the most informed strikers in one of the most in-form attacks against one of the most out-of-form defences. He's sort of like, again, the names on the teams aren't glamorous, but they're just the facts of the matter, so has to be a good option.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, and this is obviously without hearing about Haaland and without knowing whether you know, what transfer I might make if he isn't good to go, but yes, I think for me at the minute it'll be Salah. And I think it would be Salah irrespective of whether, you know, if Haaland is out and I bring in, you know, say a Watkins or a Solanke or whoever up front, I think it would still be Salah. If Haaland is good to go, Salah versus Haaland is a bit of a toss up, because I do particularly like that kind of always target Man United defence idea. And it genuinely isn't just to wind Andy up. Because I know that he's pretty on board with it too. So yeah, but I guess it does become a bit of a toss up if Haaland is good to go.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not anti-targeting Man United's defence. And we've said loads about Haaland this year. Like you said, like, I just agree with what you said, basically. Yeah.
Great stuff. All right, well, let's leave it there, Andy, and let's finish, as we always do, with a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is Stat? Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe, and the other person has to guess who it is. They get 5 clues. If they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points. After the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. Each time they hear a new clue, they get 2 minutes to tick or twist on their previous guess, so we don't reveal the answer to the end. You can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. Andy got a 1 pointer last weekend with Christian Romero, getting him on the last clue. Opportunity for me to extend my lead, which feels pretty rare in the history of who the heck is that. But yeah, you know, when these opportunities come knocking, you've got to try and grab them with both hands. I'm preempting a big fat zero, or maybe just the one here. But here we go.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if you watched last week. I think it was last week's episode of Only Connect yet. So, you know, I haven't.
I'm a few behind.
I'm sure there'll be lots of crossover fans of both Only Connect and FPL Lounge, two completely non-niche shows there. So again, no spoilers. Spoiler alert, you know, skip 30 seconds if you don't want to know what happened. But
well, I haven't done it.
Oh. Right.
But anyway, go on.
I can't say
go
it. On. Well, I can't say it now, can I? So it'll ruin an episode for you.
How much of a spoiler is it?
Well, it tells you the winner, so of one of the episodes.
Oh,
so.
I don't know what any of the. I don't know what any. I think Only Connect is about the process. It's not about the victory.
It ends in a tiebreaker though, so there's a dramatic end that I'll spoil for you if I tell
okay.
you.
Okay.
So let's move on. That's rubbish radio. If we're at a podcasting, yeah. if we don't ever really edit these in the sense of like getting rid of our mistakes, so maybe that's one that we can do yeah. this time. But anyway, who the heck is that? Okay. So,
right.
Are you ready?
I am.
Good. Here's clue number one. It is this player's sixth season in FPL, and they had their best ever season last year.
Okay. We don't have many six seasons, I don't think, in this game. So, let's start by running through some of the teams. Feels unlikely to be best ever season last year. I mean, I guess I'm starting with Forrest. Feels like it probably wouldn't be, but I do wonder if a Morgan Gibbs-White could be on his sixth season. That feels like he would have had his best year last year. Whether he's owned by 5% or not this year is hard to know. Spurs player, maybe someone like a Madison. Not sure if it was his best year last year. Who else could we have there? Probably that's it. A lot of new signings there, aren't there? Bournemouth. Wonder if it is old Dom Solanke. 6 years throughout the Chelsea and the Liverpool, maybe best year last year. Yeah, it could be. Luton we can probably ignore. Chelsea didn't have a great season last year. Find it hard to believe that there'd be anyone there that had their best season last season. Sheffield United. I feel like we can probably park at the door as well. City.
You've got 30 seconds.
Could be a Foden, maybe. Palace, basically. Eze, I guess it could be Eze. 6 years feels a bit much. Newcastle.
You've got 10 seconds left, so I need an answer.
Yeah, let's go with Dom Solanke, please.
Okay, Dom Solanke is, because your time's run out. Clue number two, then. This player has started every single game for their team this season. Who the heck is that?
Well, I think he has, because I think we mentioned it. So let's hold on to that thought for now. Did also say Madison, didn't I? He hasn't, so that would rule him out. And I said someone for Forest, which was Gibbs-White. Could be. Burnley, I feel like we can probably put a line through them. Everton, 6 years, started every game. Tarkowski, I feel like he's done more than six seasons. Might have been his best season last year. Possibly. Started every game. I wonder if that's a keeper clue. Could be. Therefore, Pickford. Feel like he's done more than six as well. Arsenal. Saka. Possibly six seasons. Started every game. Has he missed any? Not sure. Brighton, they feel unlikely to have many six seasons in there. Brentford, similar. Villa, best season last year. Watkins.
You've got 30 seconds.
Could be Ollie Watkins, maybe. Six feels a bit many. I'm tempted to stick here, Andy, to be honest. West Ham, Bowen. We always miss that whole season. Six feels maybe about right. I think I'm going to stick. There's no reason to go off Solanke at this point, so I'm going to stick, please.
Yep, 5 seconds. Yep, good, sticking. Okay.
Yes, please.
Clue number three. So I just gotta find the old timer because I was trying to get in there with the 10 seconds. This player, clue number three. Only 15 players in the game have had more than the three price rises that this player has had this season. And two of those are his teammates. Who the heck is Sam?
Okay, so that probably rules Solanke out because he won't have had many teammates that have had price rises. What was the question? Only 15 players
in the game have had more than the three price rises he's had this season, and two of those are his teammates.
Okay. Right, which teams, I guess, then, will have had at least three players with three price rises? They've got to be, therefore, I guess, a good side. Maybe they don't have to be a good side. Only three players. So this player's had three price rises. So they're at 0.8 or 0.3. And two of the 15. All right, yeah, okay. Who was I going through earlier? Ollie Watkins. Will he have had... what price is he at the minute? I don't know. Probably should know.
You've got 30 seconds.
God, okay. Struggling here. I'm just going to have to switch to Watkins, but I don't think that that's right. So yeah, I'll switch to Watkins, please.
Okay, 10 seconds to go. So, okay, switching to Watkins. Clue number four. The only person in the game who can beat this player for clean sheets is a teammate of his. Who the heck is
that? Right, okay. So we're at defenders then. Say that one again. So
the only person in the game who can beat him for clean sheets is a teammate.
Only player in the game that can beat this player for clean sheets is a teammate. Okay. Who's had a lot of clean sheets this year then? Tottenham had some. But there aren't many six seasoners in there, especially defenders. City. I can't think of any City defender that would have had their highest ever finish last year, unless it's John Stones, but he's had more than 6 years. Newcastle. Teammates have had more rises. I guess Trippier's had a lot. Don't know about anyone else. What other defenders could we have there? I guess it's Cher, Botman, Burn. I guess Cher's been been fit.
You've got 30 seconds.
Rule the others out. Arsenal. Like Ben White's missed some. Oh, it can't be though if he's missed games. This player played every game.
You've got 10 seconds.
Who did I say last time?
Watkins, Ollie Watkins.
I'll switch
five,
to
4-3.
Trippier, please.
One.
But it's not him.
Clue. So you're switching to Trippier?
Yeah, I just got to switch to a defender, I think, and he was the first one that I thought of.
Clue number five, then. This player's teammate is the highest owned player in their position. Who the heck is Stat?
Right, so if it's a defender, which I think it is, then the highest owned defender is Kieran Trippier, isn't it? Or is it now? I think it is him. So it's one of the others then. I just mentioned them. So we've got Botman not on his sixth season. Dan Burn might be his sixth. He would have probably had his best ever finish last, highest points total last season. He hasn't started every game though, because he's been injured. So that leaves me with Fabian Scher. And I guess by nothing other than the process of elimination, it has to be him. Who is the highest owned keeper in the game? We thought of this the other week, and I can't remember who it was. It's Areola, isn't it? So, but it can't be a keeper because
you've got
because it's someone else at the position. So it's not going to be Fabianski, basically. So it has to be a defender. It has to be a Newcastle defender. And therefore, I'm going to, yeah, by process of elimination and the powers of deduction, I believe it must be Fabian Scher. And now you're going to sing If I Believe in Life After Love at me.
You've got 10 seconds. So what's your final answer, Chris?
It's Fabian Scher, please.
Well, I don't know about you, but I believe in life after love, because for one point it is Fabian Scher. We're not with nothing if not predictable, Chris, because you knew I was going there.
I did, yeah.
And yes, I was. So, I mean, you say nothing but the powers of deduction. That is kind of the point of the game to reduce the clues are supposed to, you know, lead you to. I mean, that final clue, exactly the logic you went through, really, that as I was putting them together, the hope was that if you hadn't got it by then, you know, you would be in a position that, you know, it's one of Kieran Trippier's teammates who started every game this season, and they're as a defender, and there is only one of those. And also the fact that there'd only been 15 players who'd had more price rises. There aren't many players, only 30.
Has he had price rises then? That didn't.
Three
that,
price
that
rises, yeah, 5.3 million. Yeah.
Wow.
That got me on Romero last week, I think, when you had four or something for him.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
And considering this is clue number two, only 35 players in the game have started every game for their team this season. So I kind of, it was the clues were sort of narrowing the pool down as we went along, sort of thing. And when you said that about the sixth season in FPL, I hadn't really registered that when I put the clues together that, yeah, actually, not that you can think of or know every player in that boat, I suppose, actually, but we don't come across many of that number, do we? So it's true. Yeah,
I think it's too obvious, because like I think if you go like, you know, I listed some there that have done, you know, how many seasons has Kyle Walker done, and you know, if we had Kyle Walker in this game and you go, is this player's 18th season in FPL, it's just like, well, probably Kyle Walker then, isn't it? Like, I think you just, but then there are probably quite a few players that have actually played sneaky high number of seasons. Salah, Son being two pretty big examples. Stones, I think I mentioned, must have played quite a few. Rashford has got a sneaky high number, isn't he? So yeah.
The only thing that I worried if you had worked it out earlier that might have thrown you was that he started every game, but a teammate has more clean sheets than him. That sounds like a bit of a contradiction, but I can the player with the most clean sheets in the game is Anthony Gordon, obviously a midfielder, so probably wouldn't use that stat in from who the heck is stat point of view. But it must be that he's got taken off and had a clean sheet banked where shares stayed on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did wonder if you'd clock that at some point and whether that might throw a spanner in the works. But that, I suppose, was only going to happen if you'd landed on someone like a share by that point, probably, right? Mm. So, no, it didn't. Yeah. But yeah, that's how we ended up there.
It was the price rises that threw me, because, yeah, I had no idea that he was so expensive. But I guess, yeah, managers have been looking for a nailed way into Newcastle defence. And, you know, I think we play the game a bit differently when it comes to defenders. I think that becomes increasingly obvious when we were discussing Pedro Porro earlier. You know, we're very much like if you're a defender and you're priced 5 million or above, there's got to be a really, really bloody good reason why we're putting you in the team. And yeah, obviously when their Newcastle defenders went down, you know, we went Lascelles, didn't we? And others would have kind of gone for share instead. There we go, exciting times. But yeah, nice one pointer to head towards Christmas. Well, let's leave it there, Andy. But if our loyal listeners have any questions about what to do in this game week, how can they get in touch?
Well, they can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at @FPL_lounge. And we're coming up to a busy period. I guess after this show, you and I should probably have a chat about how we're going to deal with that, because it's many game weeks to come still in December. And yeah, we would love to hear how you're planning on dealing with it. What's your wildcard strategy? What are you doing about the Haaland, yes, Salah,
absolutely,
thing?
Absolutely. And do remember to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. We are always very keen to hear from you. Yes, Andy and I will have that conversation then, and let's post on X about when our next pod will be out, but it will be definitely out ahead of the game week 18 deadline, which is a strange little looking Thursday. But yeah, we're going to have quite an extended game week, and then obviously we're going to have to decide what we're doing over Christmas and New Year. But Andy, until then,
thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.